CBSi in the World, I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Captain Jerry Hendricks, U.S. Navy retired aviator, the author of To Provide and Maintain a Navy, Why Naval Primacy is America's First Best Strategy. Jerry published this at the end of 2020, and here we are in a new administration and a new world and new challenges. The Navy is always in the forefront of the unknown. Hence, the most recent incident somewhere in the South China Sea, an attack submarine damaged, unknown. However, what Jerry's essay in the Foreign Policy magazine, echoing his book, is pointing to is what is to be done about a Navy that needs to grow. Jerry, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. And in our original conversation about your new book, you identified the Navy by 2040 can go to 456 ships. I'm most interested in two of those kinds of ships. One is called a boat, attack submarine, similar or better than or different than or next generation to the USS Connecticut, and frigates to be built in these next years in Wisconsin. However, I'm most interested in the idea that at the same time we need to adjust, amend the fleet we have now. What's it going to look like, Jerry? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. In fact, I think you've highlighted the two things that we have to pay the most amount of attention to, which is investing in our submarine force, and particularly the fast attack submarines, which are hunter-killer subs that go out and search for the opponent's submarines as well as his surface ships. And then also SSGNs, or guided missile submarines, which carry a load of conventionally armed missiles that can be launched at long range to be able to attack enemy installations, whether it's ships at sea or whether it's port installations or other aspects of the enemy's economy. Those two types of submarines are perhaps the most important for a future high-end war. But we also have to invest in what we call the day-to-day force, the cop on the beat, which is our frigate force, which we have no frigates in the U.S. Navy now, having drawn down from well over 100 of them during the Cold War to zero today. And we're beginning to build that back up with the beginning of our Constellation-class frigates. And so that force to be out in and around the world's oceans, demonstrating American interests and protecting those interests, that really is a mission that goes to the frigate force, and I think we have to make some significant investments to build that up over the next 10 to 20 years.
What does divest to invest mean? You feature that right away in your article at FP.
Well, there's a chain of thought here in Washington, D.C., and it's not just with the Biden administration. It's been talked about for the better part of the last 8 years, mostly from the people on the left, which is that we need to get rid of some of our older platforms and our sunk cost infrastructure in order to free up money and resources and people to look at new capabilities and new technology. So the idea is to sell off your sunk cost infrastructure, perhaps some of the older ships or aircraft, in order to get that money to plow into a new capability, whether it's hypersonics or it's a new form of ship or it's the latest aircraft that's coming down the line. And so this idea of divest of old ships or infrastructure in order to invest in new is part of a strategy, but it's a dangerous strategy, which is one of the reasons I wanted to raise it within the essay in Foreign Policy. And also talk about a significant event when another nation, another great power, tried to do this in the past.
And let's go to history, Jerry, because the U.S. Navy has had ups and downs so for generations now. Where is the model of divest to invest, and how did it work?
Well, the one that I keyed upon, because everyone tends to treat it as a great success story, was the admiralty of Sir Jacky Fisher, who came into the British Admiralty in 1904. He came in with a direction from his prime minister that he was only going to have a flat to declining budget. And Fisher kind of looked around and said, well, I'm not going to be able to afford the Navy that I have with this budget, nor am I going to be able to meet the rising demand from my enemy, which was very clearly Germany at that time. And so Fisher did something very famous, which was it was called the Cull, where he cut about 150 ships out of the Royal Navy, laid them up, laid up their crews, and freed up the money and resources from that. And he invested in a whole new generation of ships, the battleship Dreadnought, which rendered all previous battleships obsolete almost instantly when it hit the water. So revolutionary was its design, as well as the accompanying battle cruisers that came along with those battleships. And so Fisher made that investment. He divested of the older fleet to invest in a newer fleet. But and everyone likes to treat that as the case study, as if it's a success. But what everyone forgets is that Fisher's actions led to a great instability in the international environment and actually caused the British to pull back from interests that they had overseas and allowed other nations to move into those interests, thus destabilizing the global environment. And it also set off an arms race because the British had given up their old fleet. They essentially had to start from ground zero. And as they built their new battleships, so did everyone else adopt the Dreadnought design. And Britain suddenly found itself at a great disadvantage. And that arms race, as is captured in Robert K. Massey's great book on Dreadnought, that arms race led to World War One, was one of the contributing factors. And so I'm a little concerned that as we look at divest to invest today, that in fact, we don't simply pay attention to the success story of a new capability coming online, but we also pay attention to the tragedy that followed as the global environment was destabilized. And I hope that's not something that we do today again.
Along with Admiral Jackie Fisher was Winston Churchill. There's a lot of politics in there. We don't have anything comparable to that. Would you agree, Jerry?
Yeah, we don't have sort of the equivalent of Jackie Fisher or Winston Churchill today. I mean, we do have a new Secretary of the Navy who's just issued his new strategic guidance, which I've read with great interest because he sort of gets at some of the key issues, including the competition with China. But to ascribe, anyone on the scale of Jackie Fisher or Winston Churchill or the American equivalent of Theodore Roosevelt, we simply don't see that type of leadership here in the modern political system.
Do we have anything that is analogous to the Dreadnought class? Are we building something that is a super weapon that is not practical for the future? Would that be the carriers or the attack boats?
Well, I don't think that either one of those would fit. The carrier is a breakout capability from, 1912. It's interesting to think that the aircraft carrier is a basic idea is over 100 years old now. It's very hard to think of another major weapon system that sort of lasted this long in terms of relevance and efficacy. Probably the only experimental platform that we would look at and say there was a breakout experimental design was the Zumwalt destroyers that we created, some 15,000 tons with an electronic backbone that really is revolutionary. But we only built three of them, very experimental. There's things that we could derive from them, but they simply didn't transform the global environment the way that Dreadnought did then. Now, the Navy is considering now preliminary investigation into what they term a new large surface combatant. But I really do think, given the rise of anti-access area denial capabilities, that really where we need to be focused is on the next generation of submarine beyond the Virginia class, because I think that that will probably be the most effective weapon in a future war. So I think that that's where our attention should be now, is on the submarines in terms of their lethality.
And the numbers you have in your book, Jerry, 62 attack submarines by 2040, 8 guided missile submarines by 2040, and 12 ballistic missile submarines, boomers, by 2040. Is that all consistent with the resources we now have?
We're going to need more resources. I mean, I call even in the book and in the essay that we need to raise defense spending by 3 to 5% year over year, every year from now until, probably around 2040 in order to catch up with the Chinese. At this point in time, they have surpassed us in terms of general fleet size. But we are definitely behind, and we need to grow the defense budget. I know that sounds strange to someone who looks at $740 billion and think that that's a large number, but it actually represents only 3.5% of our overall national GDP. And during times of great power competition in the past, we've actually spent between 5 to 6% of GDP on defense. So I think that we need to reallocate our resources. But that number, the 62 submarines and then the 8 SSGNs and the 12 boomers, that actually represents the maximum capacity of what our industrial base could do. Right now, we're having difficulty producing two submarines, fast attack submarines per year. We need to grow that to three, and we're trying to. But at the same time, we're also beginning to produce the new Columbia-class ballistic missile submarines. And the industrial base is under a great deal of strain from both COVID as well as other things that are just naturally going on in our economy. It's harder to find welders and electricians and pipe fitters, the things that we used to really value in our economy, working with your hands in industrial settings. It's becoming harder to find those workers today, and we need to place greater value on that workforce.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired, Vice President of the Telemus Group, author of To Provide and Maintain a Navy. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.